on today's Compassion Radio.
Now, you and I both know that not everybody learns the lessons. And I think that the ones that don't are the ones that are confronted with those situations where they don't necessarily come out the hero in any story. And whether they make excuses or they deflect or they blame somebody else, that is the barrier to real growth. And I think growth comes from everything we learn. Experience comes from bad decisions, and good decisions come from experience.
Hi, friends, and welcome back to Compassion Radio, where we share stories of real life and real adventures, all grounded in the eternal reality of God and His kingdom. Yesterday, we started the thought-provoking discussion with David Averin, one of the world's foremost customer relations experts and internationally recognized motivational speaker and author. So what does that have to do with kingdom issues? Simply this: David has made it his life's mission to find out what really makes people tick, and how to bring out the very best in people, no matter their circumstances. Along the way, that also led him into a very personal and honest quest for God's truth and presence in his life and family. It's a fascinating story in itself, but there's more David has to offer us in the series, and he's been very gracious with me to tackle any question I could throw at him. In this second segment, we'll recap a little from yesterday, as David reminds us how important our own story is in bringing encouragement, life, and light to others. As he'll remind us, it's still a story in progress, no matter how much life might seem interrupted right now.
I looked at them and I said, every one of you has a story. Every one of you has heartbreak and joy and digestive issues and all the things that make us human. All of us do. And we tend to see each other for our strident political beliefs, for the volume of our rancor or discourse. And the reality is, everybody is doing the best they can, mm-hmm. right? Maybe we have different ideas of how to get where we want to go, but we all go home and we make our kids dinner and we do the best we can. And so I think during this time, what has been apparent and lost is the opportunity to have those deeper conversations. So once again, my mantra, Bram, is to seek out opportunities, schedule serendipity, look for those opportunities to have deeper conversations, turn off the phone, lean in, and be curious about the wonderful person that's across from you.
That's a good word to bring up now, the idea of curiosity. I talk a lot about the importance of imagination. We can't really pray for the things or act on the ideas that we have not imagined.
Sure.
And we're not allowing our minds to explore what might be. We don't create anything. But the idea of being curious about the world and about the people around you, there's virtue and reward just in that, outside of anything else transactional. Life itself, I think, revolves around both the productivity that we can find the tools at hand and master them and make something of our lives and of the things around us, but also of recognizing and identifying and speaking into, through action and with words, the people around us. And that really, for me, is the measure of the man in the long run. Did we really connect with anybody? I mean, it's got to be the measure of what we do in radio, because, you know, my right. motivation is trying to get people to step up and get involved with projects and with people that they would never have heard of any other way. That Compassion Radio is here to make that connection. But I don't want people just to be informed. I don't want them to be decided. I don't want them to be polarized or sure of what they think. I want them to act like Jesus. That's what we do in this program. At least we hope we do. So, curiosity. How do you develop curiosity about the people that you are sent to go influence for the better?
We always have those people in our life where they're coming from this perspective of, well, anyway, enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think about me?
Exactly.
Right? It's hard to get out of our stuff. You had mentioned something about making real connections with people, and how do we do that? We do that by learning more about them and the things that would surprise us and the things that would amaze us and the things that would make us go, I had no idea. Yeah. And when we are curious, I'll tell you something. This is actually a story I've never told, but I've been okay. percolating on this because I'm thinking about writing it down. And I probably won't tell it well because I've never told it before, but there was a time.
I think our audience is probably forgiving on this one.
Okay, good. There was a time 25 years ago that I used to sing with this a cappella doo-wop group called The Diners. And we had great fun, and we would do clubs, and we sang on cruises, and we had a CD in the stores and things like that. A lot of fun. But we would do these outdoor festivals, the big Taste of Colorado, my home here in Colorado. And every summer there was this old guy who had his pants pulled up to his chest, and he would do the funniest dancing. And I remember thinking to myself, this guy is just a fool. I mean, he doesn't realize how ridiculous he looks. And of course, I was in my 20s and probably a little too arrogant, or let's just say I was definitely a little too arrogant. He was easy to make fun of. Huh. Well, we did a big cruise for all of our fans, and I ended up sitting next to him on the bus on the way to the cruise. This guy is here. And I start talking to him, and literally I'm ashamed at what I thought before, because this guy had been a fighter pilot during World War II. Huh. His wife had passed away 10 years ago. And his favorite thing to do is dance. He'd worked in corporate America for IBM for a lot of years. And he said he was going to spend the rest of his days dancing because he loved to dance. Yeah. So he had tuxedos in 8 different colors. He just went from one cruise to another and spent his life on cruise ships. And he got to dance every night. And I just remember being transfixed by this man's wonderful stories. And at the same time, feeling ashamed that I had judged him and that I had mocked him. And from then on, I decided to look for any opportunity to find somebody's story. So now I embarrass my kids because I'm in the back of an Uber or in the back of a taxi. I engage everyone, the housekeeper, the cleaning staff at a hotel. I talk to everybody and I want to know their story. And I am richer for it. And I try to model that for my kids, because they hear things that they wouldn't have expected. And they're like, oh, God, Dad, you're so embarrassing. I'm like, I want you to be that person. And I want to model that and be that for my kids.
Let me riff on the word shame for a second. It's got a bad name, and it should in a lot of ways, because the idea of shaming, being the one who shames, is rightfully a problem, because it is at the heart of bullying.
Absolutely.
It is trying to create an atmosphere of denigration towards others and somehow lift yourself up by stepping on the bodies of those below you. But shame itself is kind of underrated. And that if we're willing to allow ourselves to be shamed by our own sins for having judged others incorrectly or arrogantly, and allow ourselves to confront the reality of our own selfishness, our own pride, something transformational can happen.
Right.
It's permitting ourselves to be shamed and letting, as we would say in our evangelical world, let God bring to our attention those things which are not of his spirit. God does not shame either. I don't believe that at all, and some do, but I do believe he allows us to confront truth, and that sometimes feels deeply convicting for people, as well it should, but I don't want to leave people in the shadow of shame either. You've allowed yourself to be shamed in ways that have matured you and have made you more compassionate along the way. What would your advice be to young people who are looking at a world now that is difficult to navigate, but they feel like they've got to make sense of it all, and sometimes at the expense of others?
I think part of it is allowing yourself to feel it and to marinate in it, to understand and recognize the lesson in the loss. And even if the loss is in self-esteem, maybe being cut down a few notches. You know, I'm in a profession. It's bizarre, Brown. I mean, I have a job where people clap for me at the end of the day. Come on. People are incredibly kind to me. They line up and I sign books and they want to take a picture. And I come home and my wonderful wife says, hey, Mr. Big Shot, take out the trash. Mm-hmm. There's something wonderfully grounding. I mean, you ask the question, what do? I think you surround yourself with people who will call you on your stuff. Oftentimes celebrities and others, their closest friend is somebody that they grew up with because they knew them before they were important. So I think it's important for us to recognize those situations, to marinate in it, and learn and grow and be different. It's the same thing when we're little and our parents tell us, don't touch that flame. We have to touch the candle and then we don't do it again.
We hope,
right? Because we learn. Now, you and I both know, and your listeners know as well, that not everybody learns the lessons. And I think that the ones that don't are the ones that are confronted with those situations where they don't necessarily come out the hero in any story. And whether they make excuses or they deflect or they blame somebody else, I think that is the barrier to the real kind of growth. And I think growth comes from everything we learn. One of my favorite lines is that experience comes from bad decisions and good decisions come from experience. And so as parents, we have to allow our kids to suffer the consequences of poor decisions that they make. Otherwise, we rob them of the opportunity to grow. But I try and look at my experiences, and I'm about to be an empty nester. And I love the line that says, as parents, we're not raising children. We're raising adults. Mm-hmm. And our job is to prepare them for the world. I have all these pithy quotes, and I love the one that says that my father didn't tell me how to live. He lived and let me watch him doing it. Mm-hmm. And so I try to be that model for my kids in that way.
That's going to be the pivot I want to do next, David. We're talking to David Avrin, speaker galore and author, and I'll let you do your bibliography on your books before we get done with our interview today. But you pivoted to the issue of fatherhood and how important he is in your life. I asked you early in our conversation before we got on the air here about your grounding. Where is your philosophical or faith base? You have a Jewish cultural and genetic history. You have ancestors that go back historically into some of the biggest events, good and bad, of the 20th century. You have relatives that have died in the concentration camps.
Yeah.
But you didn't identify so much with the religion itself, but you were definitely on a journey. And you were raised in an evangelical kind of mindset in Colorado and attended church for many years and raised your kids in the faith. But you still feel yourself as a man between worlds in a lot of ways. And I don't want to make light of that or make it simple for you or for us.
Sure.
But your dad is your anchor, as many dads are for their kids. But tell me about what it meant for you to grow up in that secularized world, but a man who was deeply scarred and traumatized in his own generations by what happened in Europe before him.
Yeah.
But also spoke into you truth. Tell me about your dad.
My dad was a Jewish kid that grew up in mean streets of East LA, where he was the Christ killer, was part of the excuse for the violence that he endured and the gang beatings and everything else. And coming out of that, you would understand somebody who came out with some negative racial feelings and all those. Well, and the reality was just the opposite. Hmm. He came out with a tremendous amount of tolerance and was hardcore with us in terms of our accepting of everyone. A story that I told in my first sappy dad book, I wrote a book called The Gift in Everyday Little Lessons on Living a Big Life. And I wrote it like when I was 40 years old, about 17 years ago. But I told a story about my best friends, this African-American kid, when we grew up together, great friend for so many years. And someday I was mad about something. And from some deep, dark, ignorant place in my 11-year-old head, I called him a racial slur. Mm. And I don't know how my father found out. I think my brother told him or something. But I just remember this rage as he came flying in my room when he realized what I had said, grabbed me by the back of the collar, marches me up the street to their house, on the front doorstep, rings the doorbell, has his entire family come out on the front porch and makes me stand in front of each one of those people and apologize for the hateful word that I had used. And it was a profound lesson for me. He said in no uncertain terms, this is not what we believe. This is not who we are. And I remember thinking to myself in later years that when confronted with a similar situation, I hope I have the courage to be as harsh and straightforward as he was.
You sensed it as shame at the time, I'm sure, and he was disciplining you. And the things are related in your emotional experience, but they are not the same. Your dad did not shame you. He provided a way out for you.
And he reminded me that I shamed myself with my behavior. And so from a religious perspective, he was not. My dad was a rocket scientist. Mm. My dad was probably as close to atheistic. He used to have the old line, there are no atheists in a foxhole. He was a rocket scientist. My father invented the first cameras that ever took pictures on the surface of another planet. So we were very Jewish by culture and heritage and ancestry. I have since done my ancestry.com, my 23andMe, and I'm 100% Ashkenazi Jewish, the same tribe. Like for 900 years, nobody ever had relations with anybody outside the tribe. But you don't grow up in America, and I'll get personal here, as a non-Christian with a positive view of Christianity.
Okay, hold there for a second. Repeat that statement. I want people to grab what you just said.
Yeah. You hear from the less kind factions of the faith.
When you're on the outside, like you felt you were, looking at Christianity, the voices you hear are not just negative, but they're projecting anger on you.
Yeah, very much. And judgmental and telling me that I was going to hell. And I just remember talking to a friend saying, at what point do we become unchosen? Right. I mean, there are no two faiths that are closer in this world than Jews and our Christian brothers. And so I was repelled because I heard from people who told me very negative things. And I knew I was a good person. And And then I got exposed to a very kind side through my wife and through family at Cherry Hills Community Church, Pastor Jim Dixon. We spent 20 years and I heard love and I heard stories and we experienced music. And I'm like, this is not what I grew up around. And from there, I made the decision that we were going to raise our children in the faith. She was already Christian. As a matter of fact, she had traveled with the Continental Singers as a teenager as well, and introduced me to a kinder, gentler, loving side of the faith. And so when we talked before and I talk about being on the journey, it's a wonderful journey. It's hard to unlearn certain things that we had in the past, but I think it's so important that our kids understood there's something far more important than themselves. And we gravitate towards that love. We gravitate as a family towards conversations of love and acceptance and grace and all of those things that, I'll be honest, I didn't hear as a very, very young person growing up. But 25 years into that journey right now, I seek it out, I gravitate towards it, and I celebrate it.
Friends, before we jump back to this important conversation, a quick reminder that it's your generosity and support that make Compassion Radio possible. Especially at a year like this, we need your vote of support. Call 1-800-868-2478. Write us at Compassion Radio, Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859, or give online at CompassionRadio.com in order to keep this program coming to you each day. And hear me when I say this, we are very thankful for you. Especially now. And now, back to the interview.
I heard love and I heard stories and we experienced music. And I'm like, this is not what I grew up around. And from there, I made the decision that we were going to raise our children in the faith. She was already Christian. As a matter of fact, she had traveled with the Continental Singers as a teenager as well, and introduced me to a kinder, gentler, loving side of the faith. And so when we talk before and I talk about being on the journey, it's a wonderful journey. It's hard to unlearn certain things that we had in the past, but I think it's so important that our kids understood there's something far more important than themselves. And we gravitate towards that love. We gravitate as a family towards conversations of love and acceptance and grace and all of those things that, I'll be honest, I didn't hear as a very, very young person growing up. But 25 years into that journey right now, I seek it out, I gravitate towards it, and I celebrate it.
Amen to that. How long did you have your dad?
My dad had passed away a few years ago, so we had him until he was 80. And just a really, really terrific man. I mean, we're just very, very close. He grew up in a family with a father who was very distant and very harsh and never once, as he had relayed to me, saw his parents show affection for each other. And he was the opposite. I mean, we are the most physically, I mean, if you watch like My Big Fat Greek Wedding, we're sort of Mediterranean. We hug and kiss and love. And I don't think I ever saw or parted with my father without a hug and a kiss. And so I attack my kids who are no longer kids. My youngest ones are 18 now. And I chew on their arms and I kiss their neck and I wrestle with my girls. And I love that. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite lines, there's a very famous sage, a guy named Noah Ben Shia. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know Noah. He wrote Jacob the Baker, a famous series. But he had a saying that was on 40 million Starbucks cups. And I love this. His quote was, "Do not hug your children so that they hug you back, but so that they'll hug their children and their children's children." I love that. But first of all, I do hug them so they hug me back. But I hope to have modeled and passed along that level of love and physicality that I think we need as humans. We're a very, very physically affectionate family. My son is 6'2 and about 220 pounds. And he is just a drug for me. I can't keep my hands off him. I bear hug him any chance I get. And I told him, someday you got to get big and strong because you're going to have to carry me upstairs to bed someday, like I did for you the first 12 years of your life.
Yeah, I think I pretty much echo that, and that I tell my kids often I'm addicted to them and they are beautiful people. And in fact, I'm in the bookend right now between our daughters. Our daughter's the oldest in the family. And my oldest daughter just graduated from Gonzaga this past weekend with her master's.
Congratulations.
And my younger daughter is going to be graduating from Calvin University with her degrees. and they're all moving on with life and doing those great things. So we're on our way to empty nesting too, except that we had a bit of an addition later in life than we expected. So we end up having a baby about 45, and he'll be with us for a while longer, turning a teenager next year. So I'm very happy that God gave us a longer stretch here and gave us the four kids that he had promised us. So I'm with you there. These paying it forward things that you're talking about, this is the right way to pay things forward. It's not just about money or fiduciary responsibility with the things in your hands you hold that are tangible, but the intangibleness of living beings. That are the things that we invest in so that they can pay it forward to those who follow them. Our church up here in Washington that we've been attending for quite a while, it's our home now, their motto as Legacy Church is to rewrite futures for generations to come. Everything about them is focused on equipping people to be change makers,
yeah,
to become the kind of people that really do transform the trajectory of their entire life and what comes from them, their progeny. That's how God changes the world anyway, is by changing people. He doesn't just drop a bucket of money there and say, that solves your problem. He drops people in key situations and says, do something with what I gave you. That's why I love my Compassion Radio family out here that we talk to, because they actually step in and make things happen in ways that only people who say yes to God can really do. I like what I'm hearing from you, David, about relationships and about the value of people and the people that inspire us the most. I'm going to ask a tougher question for you now to wrap up our time.
Sure.
What does the evangelical church need to hear from someone like you who has been on the outside, been on the inside, flows in and out, and also speaks with authority to a secular world, but from a rootedness that says there is real truth to be lived by? You don't go out there to say everything's relativistic or everything will change tomorrow. You adapt and you become an adept at doing new things new ways. But the core, the reality of how God made us as people, you recognize, and I see it in the way you speak, that you believe there's real truth out there,
yeah,
and that thing is going to be eternal. So what is the evangelical church missing right now that they need to be reminded of? What do they need to learn about people like you who had been traumatized from the outside? Especially as a young Jewish kid coming from L.A., your father being in that situation.
Yeah.
I believe, David, that God used all these circumstances to make you who you are and brought the people to you that he brought you and created the people through you that he created for his purpose and his glory. I believe that. I know you understand the language that I'm speaking here.
Yeah.
What is the church missing that needs to be rebuilt into our ethic to be world changers in the positive sense?
Yeah. I, first of all, how arrogant would it be of me to tell the church what they need to do?
Speak to me then.
I think from my own personal perspective, God is not a weapon. Mm. God is not the sword to fight your battles. God is the means to be a magnet for love. Be the kind of person that people want to be around. And there's so much fervor with those who are espousing their beliefs. And I get that. I understand the passion behind it. But you attract a lot more flies with honey than with vinegar. I think those who model that, those who are Christ-like, I think are far more powerful than those who have the bully pulpit. And so there's something wonderful in those, and we know those people, right? Those are the people that you just want to be around. Mm-hmm. I think when you model it, you bring people to it. Mm. That's the best answer that I can come with. There's a lot of ways to accomplish. There's also ways to repel. Mm-hmm. What's the old line? I mean, this is really aging myself right now. It was that great song from the early 1970s called One Tin Soldier. Mm. It says, go ahead and hate your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Do it in the name of heaven. You can justify it in the end. Mm. I think there's too much of that.
Friends, wherever you are on your faith journey, I'm sure you can identify with David's story today. Is there any of us who hasn't struggled somewhat with the challenge of loneliness or the frustration of circumstances outside our control? Who hasn't wondered or prayed about how to make a meaningful contribution to those we love when we suddenly can't be there right now to show it? The great irony seems to be that as lonely as we might feel, more people understand exactly what we've been going through than perhaps in all of history. We may have spent the past year apart, but we're all experiencing it together. My encouragement to you is simply this: God doesn't just know, He feels. If Jesus was ever a real person, our faith clearly tells us he's just as real today, and just as compassionate in a very real sense. My challenge to you is to invite him close today so that you will know it to be true. The final segment of this important and inspiring interview with David Averin is coming up tomorrow, so I hope you'll tune in then. David and his work of inspiring others to live meaningful lives in the careers they choose is found at his website, davidavron.com. There's no doubt that trying times bring out the best and the worst in mankind. I pray that God will bring out the very best of him in you today. Thank you for standing with Compassion Radio in times like this. I think you know that we're a unique voice in Christian radio. Your generosity and your faith in us make it possible for us to continue doing what we do each and every day. Our radio stations, networks, and ministry partners around the world are counting on us to continue what we do so that they can do what they do. Quality Christian teaching and programs come to you because you support it. With all this happening in the world right now, Christian radio has never been more needed to bring you the truth, comfort, and challenge that we need to live a gospel-filled life in the world. I humbly ask that you not forget us as we do the work we do for you. If you've never given before, would you consider doing so today? If you have supported Compassion Radio in the past, would you consider making us a part of your regular monthly giving plan? Thank you, friend. We're praying God's peace, provision, and courage over you today. The toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. You can mail Compassion Radio at P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And we're online 24/7 at CompassionRadio.com. Don't wait, friends. Join us online to find out how you can be involved with this unique and timely ministry. Thanks for joining us today.